The first thing I ask myself when I sit down to begin a sermon or a homily or any kind of message is some version of the question, what am I trying to say? And sometimes I like to start with the end, especially if I don't trust how I'm getting there, if I'm connecting the dots well enough. But what am I trying to say? It's just like that little apocalypse that I talked about last week. We start with the ending sometimes. So the end of my message today is this: true presence and sustainable peace are only possible when we are able to practice radical honesty with ourselves and with others. True presence and sustainable peace are only possible when we are able to practice radical honesty with ourselves and others. That's it. You may go home now. No, you are home. I thought about this idea a lot, and of course, it's evolved over time and it will continue to evolve. I can't ever land anywhere and stay there, especially as I grow and experience more of this messy, complex life that we have. But I think that I first began to understand the connection between honesty and presence, honesty and peace, when I was a therapist at a therapeutic boarding school for teens in my late 20s. It was when I realized that trust and real healing, forgiveness, all of that couldn't happen if there were any conditions placed on any of it, that people had to be able to be completely honest and know that that was received without judgment or agenda in order to find that kind of healing or peace. Here's sort of what I mean, because the truth is, if we're really honest, if we're radically honest with ourselves, even at the best of times when we're listening to others, we do have conditions about how we take in or handle or live with that information that's being shared or with that person that's doing the sharing. So let's just say that a person is telling you their story about something that they regret in their past, something that they feel shame about. When someone does that, you should assume that they're telling you the truth, right? But what you should not assume is that they're telling you all of it, especially not in that first sitting or that first few sittings. And it's so tempting when they finish their story, you want to make them feel better about this hard thing they just shared, this shame they're carrying, and you want to give them an affirmation or support. And so you say something like, well, at least you didn't X, Y, or Z, or gosh, it could have been so much worse. I once knew someone who X, Y, or Z, and that was really messed up. How many times have we done that or wanted to do that and thought we were making a situation better? But really, what you don't know in that moment is whether or not that person doing the storytelling was holding some part of their truth back, trying to see if they could trust, trying to see if you could handle that little bit, maybe you could handle a little bit more. And that part that you just named as really messed up might have been the part they were holding back. And so then a moment of presence, a moment of peace or healing, an opportunity for trust is lost. Now, you might think, I often think, that it's the storyteller's responsibility to bring forth the whole truth. And of course, that's true, right? Ultimately, we are healed by what we bring forth, by our bravery around sharing that which is the hardest to share with someone that we can trust. So eventually, you're right, in order for real healing to happen, that storyteller has the responsibility to find somewhere to bring forth their truth, to bring it into the light. But in this case, in this exchange, it's so often the listener who is the most dishonest. And by dishonesty, I mean not acknowledging to themselves or to someone else that they weren't really ready to receive unconditionally. They weren't really ready to sit with another person in their suffering. And it's really hard to admit that we don't want to be uncomfortable. And it's hard to admit that we don't want others to be uncomfortable, although that's easier to say. So we fall back on platitudes and a quick fix. But really, what's more honest is to be able to look inside ourselves and figure out what's true, because sometimes what's true is that we really want to make the other person feel better more than we want to be with them. Does that make sense? Sometimes we want to make the other person feel better more than we want to be with them. But what heals people is wanting to be with them more than we want to fix them. And that's the kind of radical honesty I'm talking about. It's the kind where we can tell the truth about how ready we are for what it means to be fully present and alive to ourselves and the people around us. We say we want to be alive and present to our lives, but so often we're trying to get out of some moment we're in, some moment of annoyance or some moment of frustration or some moment of fear or boredom. We're just trying to get out of it. Our society is a society of addicts to one thing or another, which is all about an inability or an unwanting to be fully present and alive to all that is. Have you ever noticed how you can get ready to go to a meeting or a class or an appointment or a group and whatever, but you don't want to go? You just really don't want to go. And maybe you're tired, or you had a bad experience last time, or you're hungry, or there's someone there who just drives you up a wall. Have you ever noticed that the moment that you sit down and admit to yourself or to someone else, some preferably someone else, that you just don't want to go, magically somehow the edges soften around that resistance? And you can still either decide not to go because that's the most true thing, or you can, in the naming it, you can be prepared for how you might show up, and you can set it down by giving it a voice. And then the honesty of, I don't want to, becomes the peace or the energy of, but I can, but I will. And I think that goes for anything in our lives, feeling the grief of loss fully before being able to find joy or peace again, saying a heartfelt apology before being able to let go of regret, naming the awfulness and the unfairness of a physical diagnosis before you can accept and face what's next. Presence, real living, requires real honesty. And maybe Cheryl Strayed, the author, says it best in her column, Dear Sugar. She says, you don't have a right to the cards you believe you should have been dealt. You have an obligation to play the hell out of the ones you're holding. We first have to look at our hands and see clearly the cards that we've been dealt, because we can't play what we don't see, what we don't acknowledge. Cheryl also said a quote about acceptance, but you could replace the word acceptance with peace or presence. In fact, I'm going to replace it with peace for this reading. Peace has everything to do with simplicity, with sitting in the ordinary place and bearing witness to the plain facts of our lives, with not just starting at the essential, but ending up there. Peace speaks in the gentlest voice. It commands only that we acknowledge what is true. We can't be at peace or create peace if we don't understand how our own presence is conditional. What I really think is that this simple belief in and commitment to what is true, what is real, the kind of radical honesty that comes out even when it's uncomfortable, is what makes Unitarian Universalism as a religion so powerful. I think this is exactly what we're founded on. In UU Wellspring this week, we were talking about prophets and history, which in a truly fascinating way turned into a deep theological discussion about Christianity and the Bible and why people believe what they believe and the human Jesus and his message and what's been lost and what seems relevant now, who decides and why people follow this or that spiritual path. We talked about Michael Servetus, who died for his belief that the God is one, that there is no Trinity, no proof for the Trinity. We talked about the first doctrine of religious freedom in Transylvania, Francis David putting it forth for King Sigismund to put into effect, and then ultimately Francis David died for that work as well. It's very messy, this truth-telling business. It can be very dangerous too, but it also frees something up. And here's the way I make sense of it. At some point in Unitarianism, God became one, everywhere and all connected. And at some point in Universalism, God became love, and all people became saved. And we embrace the idea that peace can be found in the absolute unconditional holding. We are being held by a source that is always with us, without judgment or agenda, that is always there. When God became one and God became love, we could name all that was hard, all that didn't make sense, all that was confusing and scary. And the more we knew we were held in love, the more we could explore and learn and try and trust and experiment, the safer we became. Unitarian Universalists moved away from identifying primarily with Christianity, not because we all became so intellectual that a belief in something greater than ourselves was impossible, but because we began to want to embody in the world that same love we believed we are held in. And suddenly, naming God as one and love meant that nothing was outside that naming. And so we were free. Free to find our own path to love. Free to find our own way to bring it to this earth with others and for others. And so suddenly, religion became less about why we believed what we believe, and instead became more of what. What are we doing to magnify this gorgeous, all-encompassing, eternal force in the world, in our lives, and in our hearts right now? The why started to matter less. Maybe you do it because you learned it from the Buddha. Maybe you do it because Earth sings to you her song, her need and her care. Maybe you do it because reason and intellect inform your path. Maybe you do it because the gods of Hinduism shake your foundations, or maybe you do it because your mama told you to. We stopped claiming Christianity as our primary orientation to the world of religion, not because we don't love us some Jesus, because some of us really do, myself included, but because of the what we do and the who we are became so much more important than the why or the who told us to. We got really honest with ourselves about what matters most. We, as Unitarian Universalists, find our own paths, and the more honest we can be about our own individual detours, stumbling blocks, fears, wrong turns, the more that mythical road will rise up to meet us, as the Irish say. And being honest is the same as getting out of our own way, so that we can move along those paths as the fully alive, generous, loving people that we were meant to be. So let's do that. Let's be really honest with ourselves. This is about self-awareness. Who are we? What do we want? What gets in the way of our ability to be together, fully present, just as we are? Let's worry less about the why, name it and let it go. And then let's see what kind of peace can really inhabit our days. Tell yourself the truth and see what happens. May it be so. Amen.